Good Thursday afternoon to you. It's a Juno afternoon here on this 24th of January. How's it going, everyone? I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and it's looking like a rainy day, likely, with some snow in there as well. Here at sea level, rain is likely, but the snow level will be at 500 feet for the rest of the day, with highs around 39 degrees. For tonight, a chance of rain in the evening, then snow late is likely, with accumulation around an inch and lows around 28 degrees. Snow is likely in the morning for tomorrow as well, then rain and snow accumulation up to 2 inches, but then the snow level rising up to 400 feet again with highs in the mid-30s. Rain is likely with some snow mixed in for Friday night, and Saturday, rain and snow again with highs around 35 degrees. It's that sloppy weather that we know we love and get here in Juneau. We got a great show for you today on a Juneau afternoon, including folks here. Kyle Pickett from the Juneau Symphony is here, and also Dr. Noise is with us to talk about a series of family concerts that are going to be happening this weekend. Real fun stuff. Rick Caulfield is here from Big Brothers Big Sisters to talk about the local leadership council member program and the National Mentoring Month. The Fireside Lecture Series out at the Mendenhall Glacier and Visitor Center. We'll talk to Mike Heckers and Dan Lesh about that. And Nancy DeCherney will be here a little later to talk about all the great arts activities happening this weekend on Arts Up. First, here's National Native News.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. On Wednesday, the Eastern Shoshone Tribe reopened a child advocacy center to help victims of physical and sexual abuse. Wyoming Public Radio's Rebecca Martinez reports.
The Northern Arapaho Tribe, which shares the Wind River Reservation and many services with the Eastern Shoshone, operated a child advocacy center until funding ran out in recent years. Rachel Gert is the chapter coordinator for Child Advocacy Centers of Wyoming. She says the three remaining CACs in the state served almost 600 children in 2011, and losing the center on the reservation left a big gap in services.
Child abuse victims are more likely to receive counseling, therapy, and medical services. That is very necessary for the healing process to move forward. And using a child advocacy center can save maybe $1,000 per investigation by the coordination of services.
The Eastern Shoshone Tribe has received about $350,000 in tribal assistance grants to open a new center. Eastern Shoshone Department of Juvenile Services Director Clarence Thomas says the center will serve children who are enrolled members of federally recognized tribes or who are direct descendants of members. Thomas says the new CAC is located in the house instead of an office building or police station and has a private room where an expert can conduct video-recorded forensic interviews of young victims.
It won't be intrusive. It'll be something where the child can feel good and not feel scared.
The single recorded interview can be used by law enforcement and government agencies to investigate and prosecute a crime, which saves money and can prevent re-traumatizing a victim with multiple interviews. Thomas says the tribal assistance grants will cover operating expenses for the CAC for 3 years. He says he has plans for more sustainable funding to keep the center going into the future. For National Native News, I'm Rebecca Martinez in Laramie.
The National Congress of American Indians is calling for immediate action on the Violence Against Women Act, which was reintroduced in Congress this week. The bill, which reauthorizes the nearly 2-decade-old law, assists victims of domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking. It's been held up in part because of new protections for Native women and for the gay and lesbian community. NCAI says it's encouraged by bipartisan support in the new Congress. The CBC reports Attawapiskat Chief Teresa Spence is expected to end her more than a month-long hunger strike today. Spence was encouraged by other First Nations leaders and politicians to do so. Her effort was to convince Canada's top leaders to make First Nations issues a top priority. A Native American woman is appearing on the television show Project Runway. Patricia Michaels from Taos Pueblo, New Mexico, was picked as one of 16 fashion designers to compete for the top spot. In this online video, Michaels wowed casting agents.
This is inspired by Coco Chanel.
Well, Patricia, you know what? I love this aesthetic. It's really cool. It's something that we've never seen before. At least I haven't seen before. It makes me really excited.
Your use of the leather is genius. This Thank you. Your Native Chanel dress, I think, is adorable.
Michaels told the Santa Fe New Mexican it's time Native people get out of their comfort zones. She took this challenge to go beyond doing museum shows and to evolve as an artist. Season 11 premieres tonight on the Lifetime Television Channel. During this week in 2010, Alaska Natives were the first to be counted in the U.S. Census. The Census Bureau began the count in rural Alaska villages not linked by roads in the winter while the ground was still frozen, so villagers could be reached by snow machine or dog sled. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. This is a court-ordered legal notice for Native Americans. The Cobell Indian Trust Settlement is approved. If you believe you might be included in the settlement, you need to file a claim by March 1, 2013 to get a payment. Information is available at the website indiantrust.com. or by calling 1-800-961-6109. That's indiantrust.com or 1-800-961-6109. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juno Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juno Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Music from Copeland there, and that's some of the music that'll be performed by the Juno Symphony coming up this weekend. And Kyle Pickett from the Juno Symphony is with me right now, as well as Dr. Noise is here.
Hello.
Hello, Dr. Noise.
Hello. It's nice to be here.
And also Candice Lavolsi is with us as well, who is a harpist with the Juno Symphony. So thanks so much for coming in as well.
Absolute pleasure.
Yeah. Kyle, tell me a little bit about all the festivities happening this weekend.
This is a big weekend for the Symphony. We have our schools concert, which is a once-a-year thing we do, where we bring fourth and fifth graders in to hear the symphony play live, and that's tomorrow morning, Friday morning.
Okay.
And then Friday after late afternoon, evening, 6 o'clock, we're having a family concert, and this is something we started doing last year. It's a pay-as-you-can performance. It's open to everybody in Juno. And
someone's crashing the concert,
and Dr. Noise is going to crash that concert as well.
There he is.
God's
yeah.
crazy. God's
and,
totally crazy.
You know, this is the kind of concert where if you sort of feel like, hey, I'm not sure if my kids are ready to go, you know, they're wiggly, bring them. It doesn't matter. That's what this concert's for. We want them to be there.
Wiggly kids are invited.
Dr. Noise, tell me a little bit about what people can expect and not expect when they see you in the concert.
Well, I get to play with, it's really an honor for me to be here. This is my second year in a row being here. And Kyle is nuts, and that is why he's having me for a second time. We play classical pieces. We also get to play Dr. Noise pieces, and we do them in a decidedly different style than most classical concerts. There's a lot of interactivity. Kids go crazy. We'll be doing some mean things to Kyle during the performance.
That's very good.
And there's this weird harpist lady who keeps following me everywhere I go in
Candace,
my concerts.
You gotta rebut
from state
that
to
here.
State.
Yeah. How you doing?
Secret identity.
So tell me, just staying with you, Dr. Noise, a little bit. Now, do you get to work with symphonies often, or is this something that's a little unusual for you?
Yeah, I mean, I play solo shows all over the country,
right.
But I have played with the North State Symphony in California,
uh-huh.
and I'm playing with the Bozeman Symphony next month. Both of those are being conducted by a conductor you may have heard of named Maestro Kyle Pickett.
I was going to say, there's a common theme here.
Yes.
Corey and I started working together. It's probably been 5 years. Well, I mean, we've known each other for a long time. We were in college together and worked together in college. And in fact, I got to know Corey because he was recording a pop album, and he wanted orchestral players on this.
Oh, okay.
On this, I shouldn't say pop, a rock album. It was sort of indescribable.
A weird album.
Yeah, and so I played as a musician on that album, and I said
he was a flautist.
I said to Corey, you know, maybe a couple years later, I said, you know what, when I have an orchestra someday, I want you to write a piece for it. And he doesn't remember this, but he said, yeah, get back to me on that when you have an orchestra.
Yeah. You notice the incredible confidence, dare I say arrogance, in a young 20-something Kyle Pickett who said, when I have an orchestra.
Well, that's what
you
want in a conductor.
That's
you need that.
That's what a conductor's all about, baby.
That's right. turning your back to the audience the entire time. Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
And I would,
right.
I would note the equal pop star arrogance of get back to me when you have something concrete.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, but, that was awesome.
But so, you know, a few years ago, I had two orchestras. I had the Juno Symphony and the North State Symphony. And I said, I want. By that time, Corey had stopped trying to be a rock star and started doing kids music. And I said, let's do some kids concerts.
Tell me about that change in your career when you went to doing kids music and to help, you know.
I didn't notice a change.
Okay.
Yeah. I wasn't just aware that I ever stopped. Yeah. No. Actually, what happened is I did this kids album when I had my first kid. I have two kids. They're 10 and 8 now. And we did this album called The Ballad of Phineas McBoof, and this radio station called Sirius XM Kids Live, which is a station I had never heard of before I did kids' music, started playing this song like crazy, the song Banana, and it went to number one on their national charts. I didn't even know there was such a thing as a kids' national charts. And all of a sudden, I had to put together a show because I had never played a live show before. So I started playing this one-man band show, and then...
How is that? Is that like literally you've got multiple instruments
In fact, they're all going to be there the symphony show because we're doing Don't Be Silly, aren't we?
So I
have a guitar, I have a keyboard. Do you notice that I'm asking him the day before the show, what are we doing again?
Yeah.
It's a different sort of orchestral
sign.
Show.
Yeah. So, well, yeah, that's all there assembled around you, kind of?
I've got a guitar, a keyboard, a saxophone, a percussion instrument, and... vocal mics and bring kids up to loop record things.
Well, I was going to say, and the computer. I mean, that's actually the key to it, is he does all this on-the-fly mixing and looping along with his instruments and the kids.
Yeah, it's all about computers these days. Have you ever seen Terminator?
I've seen it.
And actually,
Skynet.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. No,
we
I know.
We should point out that Corey took this show yesterday to Glacier Valley Elementary School.
I did.
And did the show... In fact, you've been to three schools.
I have, and Candace has been to several schools as well. We've been getting out there in the schools and having fun with the kids. And I mean, kids are the best audience in the world, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Now, Candace, the harp, you play a massive floor harp, right?
That's right.
You stand behind it.
Mm-hmm. A nude piano.
And it's, right, and it's... That is something that's so often seen as a very formal, stately kind of instrument. Then to mix it with kids' music really interesting.
I've always wanted to be a rock star, so knowing Corey is perfect.
You know, actually, I'm going to interrupt. There's a story here, too, because the first show I did with Corey, he didn't write a harp part. And Candace came to me and said, "You tell Corey next time to write a harp part."
I did.
There's a harp part.
So that's why there's a harp part.
If I ever wanted to be invited back, there was going to be a harp part.
But I would think that for kids, though, but while the music of the harp is so, you know, beautiful and all that, it must be a fascinating instrument for kids to want to go up and touch. And
oh, yeah. It's a very tactile instrument.
Right.
And actually today I used... paintbrushes to play with, the harp with, and then I also taught the kids all these insect sounds, and we played this song called "Even Among Insects in This World, Some Are Good at Singing, Some Bad."
Yeah, well, that's
During the music, I would cue them, and they would make their insect songs,
nice.
So we created music together, and we were composing.
Which schools did you go through today?
Let's see, Riverbend and Harborview today.
And so
it
now
was
the
awesome.
Harp strings just gummed up with Play-Doh.
Yeah.
It's just a mess.
By the way, I think what I just heard from Candace is that kids are invited to bring their own paint and paintbrushes to the show tomorrow night and
go nuts
and
on the harp.
Paint on her harp.
That's right.
Or on Kyle's backside. Turn to the.
Candace, I have to say that sounds way cooler than what I did with the kids today.
Just stick with me, baby.
So you've got, that's part one of kind of what's going on, these really fun kids concerts that are happening. And then you've also got the Tenderland concerts, and that's some of the Copeland music we're hearing.
That's right.
Yeah.
So in addition to our families and kids concerts, we have our subscription concert. This is the second of our subscription concerts, and that's Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, both at JDHS. And it's a great selection of music. We're playing Appalachian Spring by Aaron Copland, which to me is one of the most quintessentially American pieces. You know, even though Copeland spent most of his life on the Upper West Side of New York, you know, this is a piece that captures the essence of the West.
You can just see the wheat waving.
You can.
You can see the mountains.
I know it's about the Appalachian Mountains, but I don't think it's really about the Appalachian Mountains.
Right.
It's about the West.
Right.
It's about the Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a beautiful, beautiful piece. And then we're doing a couple other pieces on the concert. Our young artist audition, our youth concerto competition winner, David Miller, is playing violin. He's a high school student and doing a great job as a soloist with the orchestra. We're doing a piece by Michael Torkey, who is a fairly young American composer, and that piece is called Bright Blue Music. That's being conducted by Todd Hunt, our associate conductor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the closest to minimalism that we've ever gotten with the Juno Symphony. It's a really neat piece, though. I like it.
Very
I like
cool.
it quite a lot.
Yeah.
And then the other piece is The Tenderland. And that is Aaron Copland. He did a suite from his ballet. I'm sorry, his opera, The Tenderland. And with that performance, we are showing a film by Roald Simonson that incorporates pictures taken by fourth graders through town. And it also incorporates some really amazing film footage that he found in the historical archives in the State Museum. And, you know, it's great images, people getting off the docks. You know, this is in the 20s and
mm-hmm.
30s.
Yeah.
Images of, you know, fire in downtown in 1932. And then it culminates with images of the statehood ceremony, which is really spectacular. And so it seems like a very appropriate thing for us to be doing on our 50th anniversary
nice.
Season.
And then on Monday, you fall into a coma for 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
just to decompress.
Yeah, and then Monday, I jump right back into the next project.
Right,
that is
exactly.
the way it goes.
That's the way it goes, but that's good. That's
it
good
is.
Stuff. So great, a big, busy weekend for the Juno Symphony. Let's go through the schedule one more time. The family concerts with Dr. Noy start on Friday.
Family concert is 6 o'clock on Friday evening. At JDHS, it's pay as you can. Just come, you know, bring your family, bring the whole family, come and enjoy a fun and wacky concert with Dr. Noyes. Our subscription concerts are Saturday night at 8 o'clock at JDHS with a pre-concert talk by me at 7 o'clock.
Okay.
And then Sunday, the show's at 3 o'clock with a pre-concert talk by me at 2 o'clock. The pre-concert talk's always an hour before the show. And those are both at JDHS. And it's going to be a good weekend.
Should be a great weekend for lovers of great music, for lovers of fun silliness, and for kids of all ages.
Absolutely.
And at those pre-concert talks that Kyle does, make sure to ask him to do his Justin Bieber medley. It is hot.
Hot.
Yeah.
So hot.
So
anybody
hot
right
who's
now.
At that, just raise your hand.
He is so hot right
yeah,
now.
He's so hot right now.
I think Justin Bieber's popularity is waning. You're going to have to find a new joke for me.
All right. Well, Kyle, Candace, and Dr. Noyes, thanks so much. Have a great weekend at
thank
the Symphony.
You. Thank you.
Thanks.
music from Copeland. That's going to be happening Sunday, Juno Symphony. Welcome back to A Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. With me now is Rick Caulfield, and Rick is runs the mentoring program part of Big Brothers Big Sisters here in Juno. You're also with the university, but welcome to Juno Afternoon.
Thanks, Andy. It's great to be here.
You're just telling me that there's you're kind of in a push right now to get folks involved in the mentoring part of Big Brothers Big Sisters because it's easy and there's kids out there who need the mentors.
That's exactly right. I'm actually provost at the University of Alaska Southeast, so that's my day job, but I have had the privilege of working in the community schools mentoring program with Big Brothers Big Sisters here in Juno. And it happens to be National Mentoring Month, so people may have seen stories or ads in the newspaper and the Empire about opportunities to serve as a big brother or big sister. And there really is a need in the community.
I was going to say one of the things about Big Brothers, Big Sisters that I hear from friends who are considering it is, well, you know, it seems like such a commitment, and if I were ever to get out of it, I'd hate to, you know, and all those kinds of things. And this mentoring program is so cool because it's this very simple way of getting involved in a kid's life in a really meaningful way.
That's right. It really is. And if anything, I would say it's a commitment of joy. Because, for example, I have my day job. It's busy. I have a lot of meetings and working at the university. But my little happens to be at Auk Bay Elementary. In fact, it's great to be following Dr. Noyes because I was over at Auk Bay with my little earlier today, and I heard just a whole lot of laughter and singing, and I wondered who that was. It was your guest just a moment ago, Dr. Noyes, lining up for the symphony this week.
Here.
It's a small town. We love that about Juno.
Right.
But I just took an hour out of my day today, as I do once a week, and I went over to join my little for recess. He's a third grader in Mr. Dean's class, and I go out on the playground with him, and we talk about sports, we talk about his pet, we talk about things that are on his mind. I get to know some of his friends, and I get to see the dynamics there and just be an adult presence. I think the teachers appreciate people who do come in and spend a little bit of time, and it's especially for those who young people who are in need, who've been identified as perhaps coming from a home that there's no single parent, that sort of thing, or where there's been some other difficulty in their life. And the net result is they found across the country and throughout Alaska that those who've been mentored through the Big Brothers Big Sisters program are more likely to do well in school. They're more likely to treat adults with respect and get along with their friends. And so it's overall been proven to be a very important ingredient for young people to be successful. And
yeah, just that whole idea that for typical successful children, they have not just a couple of adults who care about them, but a number of adults that care about them, and increasing that number kind of exponentially increases their chances to succeed.
Yeah, and I think, you know, part of it for me, the motivation came, I mean, I actually lost my father when I was about 6 years old, and I myself had several uncles and a couple of community members. I was involved with Boy Scouts and things like that where I had those mentors, and so I know firsthand how important that was in a situation where I came from a single-parent family. And that's been a real motivation for me to want to give back. And I think the main message is that it doesn't have to be a huge, huge commitment. It's a commitment of joy. For me, it's 1 hour a week. I've come to know my little. I've come to know the teachers at the school. In my day job at the university, when I go back to my office, people accuse me of having the biggest smile that I've ever had in the week because I've been out doing something that's just really fun and engaging with young people.
It must just ground you in a way, right? You got your worries of the office. You go and you spend an hour with a kid who wants nothing more than just your time to read, to play some ball.
That's right.
And, you know, all of a sudden you realize, oh, yeah, this is maybe more important than that meeting I was worried about.
It absolutely grounds you in what's really important in the world. And the other thing, too, is that, you know, we all have busy lives, and there are some weeks when I can't go, and I'll just send an email to the teacher and say, I'm not going to be able to make it this week. So, you know, even if you happen to be out of town or you have some other commitment that just makes it impossible to do your weekly visit with your little. You can get the message to someone that can't do it this time around, and that's just fine.
What's a typical hour that, you know, what kind of stuff do you do?
Well, as I say, basically I go out to recess, and I play sports.
You get to have a recess?
I get to have a recess. It's a rare
Man,
joy.
Man, I miss recess.
It's a rare joy, and I get to play football, and I'm usually the tallest one around. You
sure,
know?
Yeah.
Double the size of
put you on the third front line.
So
yeah.
They put me out on the tight end out there.
Okay.
But I do have lunch, and then sometimes we'll read. So it's an opportunity to help with the reading. Every one of these is probably a little bit different.
Sure.
But in this case, I think it's a steady presence. It's someone that he's come to know who cares about him and cares about his friends and his setting in the school. The one other thing I wanted to say is there's a terrific staff here in Juneau. Torin Ulrichsen is the director for Big Brothers Big Sisters here in Juneau, and I work with Thomas Kramer, who is my immediate connection with the organization. So they provide great support and training, so you never have to feel like, what do I do? I don't have any idea how to even go about engaging with my little. Again, the school program is so simple and so flexible that I would really encourage anyone, especially men, because there's a great need. I believe there's a waiting list of like 30 young boys in the schools who are needing big brothers, certainly big sisters as well. Anyone who's thought about doing this, I would really encourage them. You can go on the website here in Juneau, Big Brothers Big Sisters, and the staff contact information for Torin and Thomas and others who are there, and they'd be happy to talk to you about what kind of commitment is involved. And I think you'd find it a really enriching and rewarding experience.
What age groups of kids are we talking about?
You know, I believe it's up to middle school age, and certainly there are people who start out at a very young age, in some cases stay with the same little for a number of years. In other instances, it might be just a year or 2 years or something like that. It has to be agreeable, of course, to the family, the parent, to the student himself or herself, and it has to fit with the Big's schedule. And that's something that we look at every year just to make sure it's still a good fit. Sometimes a shift has to be made, but it's something that I like to think can help make a difference one child at a time in our community.
The mentoring program is also really significant because oftentimes people find out, just like you, boy, I really love this and I'm really connecting with this kid, and maybe I can spend more time and maybe I can make more of a commitment as the years go on.
That's right.
And so you become a full-fledged big and with a little.
That's right. Yeah. So it just depends on your schedule and your availability, but the fact that it's just really an hour and 15 minutes a week makes it very, very doable, even for all of us who are very busy with our day jobs.
Have you seen it make a difference for your little? Have you seen it make a difference in little's lives that you kind of think back and say, boy, you know, just a few months ago, that wasn't happening?
You know, I'm not sure I could quantify it in any way, but the level of familiarity that we have now, where he seems excited to see me and I'm excited to see him, his friends the same, the fact that we can talk about things that are going on in his life, one more person who he has come to know, an adult he's come to know and has confidence in, who can, you know, throw a decent football pass once in a while.
Right.
I think all that, I like to think, will make a difference in the long run. I mean, the research across the country is, as I said earlier, is that those students who are involved in the Big Brothers Big Sisters programs do better than their peers who don't have that kind of mentoring opportunity. So I'm laboring in the faith that it will have some impact in the long run.
Well, it's interesting your role in the university, where you're working with young people who are kind of at the cusp of adulthood, and some cases are even a little bit older and that kind of thing, and seeing their success and kind of being a part of that, and then going all the way to this kind of early educational process must be an interesting thing for you to see both ends of that.
Well, they reinforce each other, of course, because we all know that those who are most successful in later in life as parents, as members of a community, as employees, are those who have a really solid foundation at home. And it does start at the very, very early ages. And we know there's a lot of pressure on early childhood programs, for example. We know that budgets are tight, and there isn't as much money around to provide the support, even in the schools that you might think. So it requires all the more volunteer effort like this, I think, to support the professionals, the teachers and preschool teachers, elementary school, middle school teachers, and those who have a good grounding at home and have a good grounding in school are confident, are learning to read, they're learning to do math, they have fun out on the playground, and they have supportive adults. Those are the folks who are going to go on and get, good careers later on in life, be contributors in their own community and have great families.
Yeah, we lead complicated lives in this modern world of ours, and I think what this so much points out is there's no one way of success for young people. I mean, I guess we would all hope that every single kid out there would have a, quote unquote, normal family with a mom and a dad and all that, and everything's just great. But sometimes that's not the case, and this is a way to sort of meet the needs in different ways for different kids out there.
I think the truth is, more often than not, that's a rarity. And most kids, I think, we all live in a complicated society, like you're saying, and many, many kids don't have the kind of environment that, a two-parent family and that sort of thing. Yeah. So I think that's where all of us can play a role, and it doesn't have to be a huge, huge commitment, but it can be very, very satisfying. And I would just encourage anyone who's thinking about it and would like to learn more to contact the Big Brothers Big Sisters staff here in Juneau. And even for those who may not be able to commit the time just now, I will also say that I just filled out my PFD application, and you can, through the Pick, Click, Give program, identify Big Brothers Big Sisters as an organization that you'd like to support. And what that does is it provides the staff support that I mentioned that's so important to a good match, and providing all of us who are volunteering with the opportunity to be effective in that role.
Web address for folks that are maybe interested in this?
Yeah, it's www.bbbs, Big Brothers Big Sisters AK, bbbsak.org.
And you can find out the information there. You can get in contact with the staff at Big Brothers Big Sisters, and they can get you involved in the program for mentoring a young kid who's out there waiting for you. Listening right now, they're waiting for you to get involved in their lives in this very easy way, just an hour a week, as you say, through the mentoring program. Thanks so much, Rick Caulfield, Big Brothers Big Sisters. Really appreciate it. Thanks
so much
for coming into Juneau Afternoon.
Thanks very much.
Now here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 24th of January, 2013. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "Life is always a tightrope or a feather bed. Give me the tightrope." Edith Wharton, New York City, 1862, many of whose novels have been made into movies: The House of Mirth, The Glimpses of the Moon, The Age of Innocence, all made into silent films around the 1920s. Martin Scorsese directed a film adaptation of The Age of Innocence. In 2000, Gillian Anderson starred in The House of Mirth, directed by Terence Davies. Edith Wharton came from a wealthy New York family, lived off the inheritance of their real estate banking ancestors. She spent several years of her early childhood traveling around Europe. Family lived around 23rd and Park Avenue in New York City. She felt alienated and adrift in high society. At 23, she married a family friend, a good-looking sportsman named Edward Robbins Wharton, who wasn't particularly fond of books, and she was. Teddy Wharton was manic depressive, a big spender, and was unfaithful. And it was a long and miserable marriage. Edith Wharton met Henry James in Europe. She became good friends with him. He encouraged her to write about the New York City that she knew so well. And it was Henry James who introduced Edith Wharton to his friend Morton Fullerton, who was an expat journalist, wrote for the London Times from Paris. Edith Wharton fell in love with him. She filled her diary with passages about how their romance made her feel complete at last. She wrote him pleading letters. And about a year into their affair, when she was in her late 40s, she moved to Paris, where he lived. The affair came to an end in 1911, the year that she published Ethan Frome. She stayed married to Teddy Wharton for a few more years, although they lived apart from each other. She loved living in Paris. She was friends with André Gide, Jean Cocteau. She knew Theodore Roosevelt, F. Scott Fitzgerald. She told Fitzgerald, "To your generation, I must represent the literary equivalent of tufted furniture and gas chandeliers." But she wasn't prim or overly proper. Died in Paris at 75. She was working on a novel called The Buccaneers, about five rich American girls who set out to marry landed British gentry. Spent her last days in bed working on the novel, dropping each page onto the floor so it could be collected later and typed up. Here's a poem for today by Charles Bukowski, "Cats and You and Me." The Egyptians loved the cat, were often entombed with it instead of with the child and never with the dog. And now here, good people with the souls of cats are very few, yet here and now many fine cats with great style lounge about in the alleys of the universe. About our argument tonight, whatever it was about, and no matter how unhappy it made us feel, remember that there is a cat somewhere, adjusting to the space of itself with a calm and delightful ease. In other words, magic persists with or without us, no matter how we may try to destroy it, and I would destroy the last chance for myself that this might always continue. Cats and You and Me, a poem by Charles Bukowski, from The Night Torn Mad with Footsteps, published by Black Sparrow Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Kathy Roach and Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Programming support comes from Bee's Bakery and Bistro, offering homemade baked goods, lunch items, and paninis Tuesday through Friday from 7:30 to 5:30. And weekends from 9 a.m. to 3. Bee's Bakery and Bistro, located downtown on 2nd Street.
I'm walking, hear the need, I'm talking. By you and me, I'm hoping that you come back.
And when Fats Domino wrote that song, I don't think he was thinking about the kind of walk that these next two guys took. But they're talking, and now next they'll be... They're walking, and next they'll be talking at the Fireside Lecture Series. It's coming up, and with me in the studio right now is Mike Heckers and Dan Lesch. How you doing, guys?
Great. Thanks.
Thanks for coming in. You guys, we just talked about it. It's kind of funny. You took a right turn at Project Playground in Twin Lakes, and next stop was the Red Onion in Skagway. It's amazing across the ice field walk all the way to Skagway.
Yeah, it was really incredible. It took us a little over 11 days, 111 miles.
11 days, I would have thought longer than that. Wow, you were covering a lot of territory per day.
We planned on 9 days with 3 days of like half rations, but we encountered quite a bit of whiteout conditions and fresh snow that's slowed us down.
So tell me, what time of year did you, what day did you start?
We started April 26th of last year.
Okay.
So I don't know if you remember, the first part of April was really nice. Pretty good folk fest weather. And then a lot of people that cross the ice field this time of year maybe have two snowy, stormy days and 10 clear days.
Right.
And that's kind of what we were hoping. You know, we heard stories of people running out of sunscreen and, you know, just getting totally fried. So that's what we were expecting. But we had the converse, actually. We had 10 very low visibility or no visibility days and two pretty nice days.
Yeah. Wow. So, so tell me why you picked that. What is that the time? Is that the standard time of year where it's still cold enough that you don't have as many crevasses, but it's warm enough that it's not complete winter? Is that the idea?
Yeah. Exactly. Go early before a lot of the crevasses start opening up.
Right.
And the snow bridges are still covering the crevasses. So it's generally, April's usually our best weather month anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do it later in the summer in June or even July, and that's when the Juneau Ice Field Research Program usually starts their trek, is late June. But we kind of diverged from their trek, and they went towards Atlin, and we kept just going north. To up to other glaciers to Skagway.
Yeah, tell me I know, especially on radio, it's hard to describe, but the general route that you took. Do you hike like directly east from here for a while and then kind of cut up north, or how do you?
We started out, so Camp 17's up on Blackerby Ridge above Lemon Creek. We did a ferry of half of our stuff one week, and then the next week we started the trip and went down the Lemon Glacier and then kind of cut up towards Nugget Peak and then across over to Echo Pass, and then you get over into the beginning of the what feeds into the Taku Glacier and then up the Taku. We weren't down anywhere near the bottom of the Taku, which people are familiar with, but we were up in the accumulation zone, the high peaks, pretty quickly. It took about a day. We're out of the sort of more mild weather and up into basically just snow everywhere.
It's kind of like, it's like 3,500 feet, that kind of general area. Is it a little higher than that up there? Or
yeah, well, actually, we went dropped down probably to 3,500 feet coming off of Nugget, and then went on the southwest branch of the Taku and had a nice day going down that. And then it was several days uphill from there, and we got up as high as 6,900 feet.
Oh, wow.
On the Canadian-U.S. border before sort of dropping back down the Meade Glacier, which feeds the Kotzehine River, if people know where that is, in Lynn Canal, across from Haines.
This is on skis for the most part, or is it snowshoeing as well, or what is
skis, it? Skis, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were all three skiing and pulling some small sleds.
So is there zones that you're in where you're really actually kind of nice, long, downhill, fun skiing, or is it kind of trudging along for the most part? Or
it certainly can be just a dream up there.
Yeah.
I mean, it can be just solid base with an inch of snow, and your sled doesn't feel heavy at all. It's not it's not full of snow, but then then there are the days where we've spent one day in our tents all day, and it snowed all day, and the next morning we woke up to an uphill battle against 18 inches of fresh snow, and our sleds with a lot of drag, and everything's just coated down with a little bit of grime, rime and ice, and there's also a complete whiteout, so the guy in front is just looking at nothing, can't even see the horizon sometimes.
Are you GPS? Is that what you're using to determine where to go?
Yeah.
So it's like IVR flying or something, It's like you're a complete whiteout.
Right, yeah.
You're the clouds,
The guy in front, actually, sometimes it's impossible to go in a straight line. And sometimes it's even hard to stand straight up because you can't even see the surface of the snow. So guys number two and three, they would redirect, say, more left, more right, it was pretty comical out there.
Are you guys roped up while you're walking like this for the most part, or usually
pretty
not?
Pretty rarely, actually.
Yeah, only when we were worried about crevasses, which was a total of 5 or less hours during the 11 and a half day trip. So not all that much, but you're in a sense tied with a virtual rope because you need each other out there. And your tracks disappear in a couple hours, an hour, even less if it's really heavy snow. And so one guy has the stove. You're using a stove to melt snow to get water. That's your number one thing you need to pay attention to, where that is. And then, of course, your tent and your gear. So we don't have duplicates of everything because we're trying to go light. So you're sort of tied with a rope, I think, in a way.
Yeah. We'd never lose sight of each other, for sure.
The rope of survival. Yes.
Exactly.
Did you, so you described the day you had to stay in the tent. It sounds like a bummer of a day, but was there a day that you really felt like was your absolute hardest day out there?
I would say, I sort of summarized that getting across the ice field is easier than getting on and off. And so getting off from over 6,200 feet right above Skagway on the Denver Glacier, getting off there was really challenging because we didn't know anybody firsthand that had done it. So we were going in there. We had some reports like ride this ridge down here, but you have to get on this ridge near the top of this peak, so it was challenging. We had really high winds, like 50-mile-an-hour winds at the first little notch that we tried to go down. And so we had to hang
you guys
it up
are crazy.
For that day.
Yeah.
But one way to
I just hit on something. Yeah. You guys are nuts.
No. One way to think about it, though, is if you get comfortable hiking the mountains around here, you're encountering a range of conditions. And so if you get comfortable doing trips around here, you could think about doing this ice field trip. It's the only thing different is just the amount of time and endurance and planning and just being remote.
Preparation for it, and then you feel like you kind of got it, as long as you feel like you're prepared. But it just seems like were there times when you felt like, man, I think we're in a little deep here. I mean, did you have those moments? I mean, I'm sure you might have those moments every now and
then.
Not really, though.
Dan, what do you think?
No, I mean, we had all had serious foot issues, which is pretty typical on a thing like this. My boot broke down, so I had bought a brand new pair of cross-country ski boots, 3-pin binding, right before the trip, which was, a bad idea, but what am I going to do? I wanted to go on the trip.
Yeah.
And they're from REI. I can return them if they don't work out.
Right.
It turns out the sole separated from the boot, and I don't have any side... sighting, like edging ability in any sort of steepness, and there's ice getting underneath between the sole and my boot, keeping my toes are freezing cold. I still have nerve damage from that. And, it was a little bit like, it kind of felt like, okay, this is not, it's kind of typical on a really long trip to have to overcome some type of obstacle like that. I just wrapped it with duct tape and a valet strap, these little plastic straps to hold it together. Some wire. It looked pretty gnarly coming down into Skagway, but it worked.
Then again, we did too. So.
Yeah. So you just had kind of a big wrap kind of around your foot. I can imagine. Yeah.
I had to have a little patience from my partners from times when I was complaining.
And what kind of stuff did you feel like you had some sort of thing like that to overcome as well, or did you kind of luck out?
We thought we were going to be able to sort of cruise across pretty quickly. So when it looked like we were only halfway on day 7, I was thinking, okay, we've got to, we're under time constraint here, we only had so much food and fuel. We had some extras of both, but, I wanted to get back to the family. And
is there an early exit strategy? Did you have any place that you knew you could drop down at some point?
Not easily.
Yeah.
We could have come down the Mead and then, tried to hike out there and, come out over kind of by Haines. But
the whole ice field is a fairly easy landing place for a helicopter or a ski plane, but they need good weather conditions.
Yeah.
And we didn't have them. Not that we were, back in the backs of our heads, I think our goal was to do it all unsupported, but we weren't against using a plane if we needed to or a helicopter. But it just didn't turn out to be an option. So that solved that question.
Yeah, and luckily, our two sunnier days, we were going downhill, so we made really good mileage. And that second sunny day, we did almost 20 miles. So that was kind of, wiping the sweat off the brow. I'm like, okay, we're making up time here. We're doing pretty well. We're getting close to Skagway. So that really helped. That was a relief.
It kind of got you over the hump and Just mentally,
exactly.
Must have really helped that.
Yeah.
Well, it's obviously an incredibly fascinating story. There's a lot more to tell. You've got a fireside lecture. It's coming up at the visitor center. What day is this? Is this today or
tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night. You've got two presentations. One at 6:30 and one at 8.
Correct.
And it's all about walking across Juneau's ice field from Twin Lakes Project Playground up to Skagway.
Exactly. Yeah. We hope to see you out there.
Yeah, it should be a really great talk. More of this discussion with Mike Heckers and Dan Lesh there tomorrow night at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Mike and Dan, thanks so much for coming in and telling me a little piece of the story of your big walk up to Skagway.
Thanks, Andy.
All right. Quite the walk. Well, you didn't take quite as long a walk to get across the street here, Nancy, come in over.
And I didn't come in on elephants either.
No, yes. As you picked up. Yes, Annabel crossing the mountains. The elephants.
Yes.
Nancy DeCherney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council is with us now for Arts Up. It's a busy weekend, starting with Jump Film Festival happening tonight, right?
Yes, and that runs for a couple of nights here. I'm sure you've all updated everybody on that, right?
We talked about it yesterday, but that tonight it starts at 7 o'clock, and then Friday and Saturday there's a 7 o'clock and a 9 o'clock showing of the Jump Film Festival at the Gold Town Theater.
And so you should probably go to get those. They show different films each time, is that correct?
No, it's the same. It's the same set of films,
right.
Yep.
We also have Betrayal running this weekend, and I was just selling some tickets to folks, and those are selling out, so don't waste a moment. Get those right away. Friday at 10 a.m., it is Edible Arts of Place, Traditional and Contemporary Preservation of Salmon and Halibut. It's a presentation I think Ed and Percy Coons are doing out at the UAS Glacier View Room. It's free, and there's refreshments after. I bet it has something to do with salmon and halibut.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But anyway, Dr. Noyes, did you talk to him?
We just talked to him with Kyle Pickett.
Okay.
And, it sounds like a really fun concert. And then the symphony is very busy this weekend.
The symphony is quite busy. We got the Dr. Noyes family concert on Friday at 6 p.m. And then they go on. We'll talk about that later. World Quest.
Oh, I didn't talk about World Quest,
okay,
but this
then.
Is a big for any trivia lovers out there. You think you're smart?
Yeah, well,
try World Quest.
All righty then.
World Quest is tough.
I'll see you in Rasia. Let's see. Anyway, that's over at Centennial Hall. You can get tickets on the jwac.org, JWAC.org website. It is $60 for regular folks and $30 for students, and it's always a fun. You learn a lot.
It's a big fundraiser for Juneau World Affairs Council, who brings in great speakers all through the year. So it's a fun way of supporting that organization.
Yep, those are all free. You just talked about across the ice field. We've got the producers at the Rockwell. Gold Town Nickelodeon is presenting this. A very funny film. One of my favorite films.
Is that Zero Mostel?
Yeah. It's very, very funny. Anyway, that's at 7, 9, and 11 on Friday. We've got East Coast Swing Dancing out at Pavitt's. On Saturday at 8 a.m., Girls on the Run Coach Training. You do this with AWARE. Give them a call. Get registered. 586-6623 if you're interested in becoming
really
a coach.
Cool program where they kind of get a group of many kids as possible, and they all train to do a 5K run, and you help train the kids who maybe aren't used to running at all, and maybe some have a little bit of experience, but you help them coach, and it's a great kind of experience for that. So Girls on the Run, yeah.
The Saturday thing's going on. There's a nonprofit garage sale. Now, I don't know what they mean by that. I would want to profit from my garage sale.
Wait a minute.
This is out at the Nugget Mall, but I think what they mean is it's for nonprofits
to
make some money.
Yep.
So that's at 10 a.m. on Saturday. And give Stacy out there a call if you're interested in having a table. 789-4439. I think it's only $10 for a table. I think this isn't happening. There's Beasts of the Southern Wild showing at the Gold Town Nickelodeon. The Southeast Roadrunners are having their awards potluck on Saturday at 6. There's a fundraiser for the Tongass Democrats. That's also at the Rockwell. At 7 p.m., there is the pre-concert talk for the symphony, The Tenderland. I always like to get the pre-concert talk because then when I listen to the music, I feel as though I know what's going on.
So, right, yes.
Kyle does a great job. It's really quite fun. So 7 o'clock, get there, get the pre-concert talk, and then there is at 8 o'clock the concert. There's also the Juno Ski Club Cash Bash drawing.
Nice.
At the Viking.
Okay.
Let's just go right to the point.
Cash Bash.
Yeah, there we go. That's at the Viking. The Jump Festival. Jazz Divas are at the Zephyr at 7 p.m. You just suggested that you get reservations for that.
That's a fun thing to go see.
Yeah, it's Kari and Alaska's Kit, and I think it's a good lineup. Beatrice and, you know, the usual.
And a small environment to see these. Yeah. You know, it's really fun to see good quality jazz singers in a small little swanky restaurant, right?
Swanky, swanky. Yes.
Look outside and you see Lake Michigan all of us. You know what I mean?
Wow.
It feels like Chicago.
Oh, goodness. It's no wind.
No wind.
Okay. So then you've also got the Betrayal and the Jump Society and the Raging Cajun Mardi Gras Ball is happening at the Rendezvous Friday night.
Okay.
Already Mardi Gras time? What happened?
This seems like, I think, wow, is it? It's not yet. It's January.
We're just getting to Christmas. How is that? Anyway, it's 9 p.m. at the Rendezvous on Saturday.
Okay.
Sunday at the Rendezvous, at the Rockwell's, there's the Jam Busters Ukulele Jam. I keep bringing this up because I don't want anybody to miss Jake Ukulele.
You might as well call him. I mean, he should just change his last name to Ukulele.
Yes, yes. Anyway.
Jake Shimabukuru is his name.
Thank you.
And he's a wonderful, amazing, can't say how amazing, cannot even describe it.
If you think ukulele is dorky and you don't believe Andy and I just go to YouTube and type in Jake and my guitar gently weeps.
Yeah, or just type in Jake ukulele, literally, type in Jake and ukulele and you will come up with Jake Shimabukuro doing Bohemian Rhapsody and doing While My Guitar Gently Weeps and all. It's amazing stuff.
Amazing stuff. Okay, so, and we also have opportunity to see the symphony pre-concert talk at 2. The concert is at 3. The Global Lens series at 3 o'clock at the downtown library is Tollbooth. It's a film from Turkey, and that's free. Should be good.
I've heard that is really an interesting movie.
Yeah, yep. The series is really interesting. I like that we were being able to get them here. International Folk Dancing over at the Alaska Club downtown at 6 p.m. on Sunday, and of course, Betrayal. Project Homeless Connect is on Monday morning, 9 a.m. It goes all through the day. This happens at Centennial Hall and at the Jack and is a way to help connect with folks who are perhaps homeless or in risk of being homeless, all sorts of stuff. So come on down and support that. There's an arts roundtable. We're going to have an arts roundtable on Monday at 5 p.m. Among the things that I know we're talking about is Pat Race is going to come and talk about an idea that he has for nonprofit fundraising or something. It's open to all people interested in the arts, so please come. There is a second of the Global Lens series, Pegasus. It's from Morocco, and that's going to be at the Gold Town Nickelodeon on Monday at 7.
Hey, let's back up to the Arts Roundtable real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really important for people to go to. This is a free public forum. It's a public forum. It's a meeting.
Yeah.
And it's especially people who are concerned about the arts or people who have ideas. As you're saying, Pat has an idea and wants to explore it with people. So, I mean, I think I just would encourage people to go to just take in one of these Arts Roundtables, even if you don't have a specific issue at hand, because they're really informative, and it's great to see the ideas that people are talking about.
And you can get to meet all the other people who are involved in the arts and the different leaders. You know, we just talk about issues that come up for different reasons. So I do encourage you to come. We have a nice time, actually.
Monday at 5, is that
Monday
right?
Monday at 5. It's
Monday
the last
five.
Monday of the month, every month, mostly. On Tuesday.
Mostly.
Mostly. On Tuesday at 6:30, Marie Drake Planetarium has an presentation on total solar eclipses. Steve Kozis is doing that.
That sounds cool.
At 7 p.m., we have an Alaska Folk Festival concert over at Northern Light Church. It is Kahalen Morrison and Eli West coming in to perform. On Wednesday, there is at 7 p.m. Warren Miller's Flow State being presented by the Aurora Project and Alaska Powder Descents. That's at the Rockwell Ballroom. On Thursday at 6:30, next Thursday, not this Thursday, Landscapes Through Geology, Ecology, and Traditional Tlingit Place Names. This is presented by the Chilkoot Indian Tribal Government from the Haines Library, but it'll be at the downtown library here. I think it's one of those owl presentations. I'm
wow,
sure.
That's going to be really, that's something to look forward to next week.
Yeah. And then at 7 o'clock, we're going to do the second of our Public Art Network Best Ofs. We're going to show the best of 2010 in public art.
Okay, now this is another one, I would say, that was so cool last time, and the reaction from people, when you just see what other cities and other entities have done as far as public art, you just immediately start thinking about the possibilities in Juneau. It's an exciting thing to look at.
It just really takes you out of sort of your preconceived notions and into a whole, like, wow, we could do that.
Right.
And it's
right.
Other communities like ours, not so much money to spend doing really cool stuff.
Yeah,
so
it's inspirational at the very least and very instructive at best. So, yeah, it's very good.
7 p.m. next Thursday, not tonight. And that's free, and it's in the Jack Gallery. So I come on down. So you got lots to choose from
lots
this week.
Lots going on. Thanks so much. That's Nancy DeCherney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, and that's Arts Up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. And as Madonna sings about Jump, go check out the Jump Film Festival tonight, 7 o'clock, Gold Town Nickelodeon. You can get tickets ahead of time if you go over to the Alaska Robotics Store right by the 20th Century Theater there on downtown. Well, thanks so much to all of my guests today, including Kyle Pickett and Dr. Noise and Candace Levolsi. We also thank so much to Big Brothers Big Sisters and Rick Caulfield. Also to Mike Heckers and Dan Lesh, who are going to do that fireside lecture tomorrow night, 6:30 and 8 o'clock at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, and to Nancy DeCherney from Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. That's it for a Juneau afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for listening in. NPR Headline coming up next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. Federal regulators.